The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studios and streaming on Facebook Live.
Welcome.
Welcome to The Big Show. Man, what a weekend. I had a whirlwind weekend.
Yeah, you did. What time did you get back?
About 11:30 yesterday morning. So took the red eye to Dallas, midnight, Friday night, Saturday morning. Took a two-hour nap, went to the stadium. Unbelievable stadium. I've never seen anything like it.
What was so different?
It holds 100,000 people. They have a video screen that is about 60 yards long from the 20-yard line to the 20-yard line that is the sharpest picture. So you go to the game and you end up watching it on TV.
Mm-hmm.
You just end up paying hundreds and hundreds of dollars to do what you could do at home.
But you get the atmosphere.
Yeah, and then the game itself for the Seahawks, it was just a bitterly disappointing outcome.
From the shotgun, takes the snap. Looks going to lay it up over the top again. This time it's caught in the end zone for a touchdown by Gallup. Gallup once again had Shaq Griffin man-to-man.
Yeah, the Dallas Cowboys ended the Seahawks season 24-22, the final score. Lots of regrets. Pete Carroll, he did his post-mortem this morning with Brock and Salk. And so Brock Huard will join us, the Monday Monson quarterback, at 12:30 this afternoon. And we will talk all about this Seahawks season and some big decisions that the team has to make. So we will do that with Brock Huard coming up at 12:30 this afternoon.
By the way, did they show Hearn's leg break on that big screen?
Oh, yes.
Replayed a couple times?
Oh, I am telling you, I have never seen anything like that image. I mean, because it was like, you know, 10 feet long, the ankle. I mean, it was 90 degrees where his ankle snapped.
Yes.
Yes. And I saw it on the field. I was looking, you know, through my binoculars. And I said, oh, man, that foot is messed up. And then I looked up at the big screen.
It was hard to watch.
Because I saw that he knew immediately.
Oh, yeah,
something
no, it gets pressure and then just snaps.
Yeah.
And you see it.
Yeah, and when you see that on that big screen, it's just absolutely, it was one of the most gory, horrifying things I've ever seen in video. Okay, so I'll get to all that with Brock Huard coming up at 12:30 this afternoon. But I have an exclusive story that could rock not just the nation, but the history of the United States of America.
What?
Our radio show could rock the history of this country. Let me get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
It is now possible that President Donald J. Trump could get impeached because of The Dory Monson Show. I was reading this morning about, the Democrats, they are absolutely determined to impeach the president. And last week, you had, one representative who said it so eloquently, so beautifully, so wisely and sagely. It was Representative Rashida Tlaib.
People love you and you win. Woo. And when your son looks at you and says, Mama, look, you won. Bullies don't win. And I said, baby, they don't. Because we're going to go in there, we're going to impeach them.
Okay. So the Democrats want to impeach the MF-er. Her language, not mine. So I started this weekend researching what precisely do they want to impeach Donald Trump for. And it comes back to our radio show. It comes back to the Dory Monson Show.
What moment exactly?
Well, thankfully, Ursula, I have audio of it. Believe it or not.
You've probably never heard it before.
Oh, no.
So, and as you know, I was adamantly against the impeachment of Bill Clinton for the same reason, because it was about politics, not about necessarily high crimes and misdemeanors, treason, the reasons that Bill Clinton, he lied about having sex with an intern. It's a sordid tale, to be sure. But it never struck me that that rose, him lying to Congress about his affair with an intern, that never struck me that it rose to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors. And I think that our framers, they set the bar extraordinarily high because they knew that if they didn't, you would have a bunch of partisan hacks who would just try to impeach the other party's president every single time. So they set the bar very, very high. So anyway, now that they've said that they want to impeach the, you know, what she said about the president. So I start going through what they want to impeach him about. And it turns out that Representative Al Green. Wrong Al Green, sorry. Representative Al Green, in his impeachment papers, he is seeking to impeach Trump for statements that he made about NFL players kneeling for the national anthem. And of course, as you know, this all started when he was candidate Trump on the Dory Monson show, and we were the first media outlet in the world to ask him about, at the time it was just Colin Kaepernick, who was kneeling for the anthem.
He had bad things to say about both you and Hillary. You following that story at all?
Well, I have followed it, and I think it's personally not a good thing. I think it's a terrible thing. And you know, he'll maybe he should find a country that works better for him. Let him try. It won't happen.
So that's when Donald Trump on our show said that Colin Kaepernick should find a better country. And so Representative Al Green, no, it's different Al Green. Representative Al Green, in his impeachment papers, says,
Mr. Speaker, I rise to denounce these comments that have been made because they have brought discourse to a new low. Mr. Speaker, this is a level of indecency that is unbecoming the presidency. Mr. Speaker, I rise to say to the world that this is not what America is all about. I will bring a privilege resolution before the Congress of the United States of America. I will stand here in the well of the Congress, and I will call for the impeachment of the President of the United States of America.
It's our fault! I was just asking a question about Colin Kaepernick, and now Al Green, who doesn't want to let's stay together, Al Green wants to impeach the President of the United States. So, yeah, I'm going through these papers that are being drawn up by the Democrats. And they say that what you just heard, he is sowing discord among the people of the United States with his comments on Charlottesville, transgender troops, and he wanted to impeach Trump for statements about NFL players who do not stand for the national anthem. So there you go. Finally, our show may carve out a place, not just in Seattle radio history, but they will be reading about our radio show in history books hundreds of years from now, when people wonder whatever happened to President Trump. And they'll find out that he just made a call. He just answered a question from a little talk show host in Seattle. And that's when Al Green decided that we can't stay together with this president, that we have to find a way to separate ourselves.
I'm so
Al's changed. It's not okay with Al anymore. So there you have it. Breaking exclusive news. The Dory Monson Show might be responsible for the impeachment of President Donald J. Trump. Nicole, would you please work to get the president on so he can rescind his words on the show where he's so misstepped, apparently?
I'm on it.
Okay. All right. We'll see if we can get Donald on sometime soon. Since we're the ones that started all this nonsense. But what? By the way, what a great reason for impeachment, too. That is, there is a well-thought-out plan by the Democrats. I thought that they were going to go into this kind of half-baked. I did not realize that they were going in with such an absolutely well-crafted plan of impeachment. This is going to be a lot of fun the next couple of years. Happy or sad. Okay, next up. In the big lead.
The big lead. Bizarro world.
Then you have the whack job local politicians who have gone to New York City to work with labor unions to demonize Amazon. As you know, Amazon is the bastion of capitalism. And our socialist Seattle City Council, if there's anything they hate it too. It's capitalism. So these union groups in New York, they've invited a couple of Seattle council members, Teresa Mosqueda and Lisa Herbold. Ooh, she's the grandma with the nose ring. Cool. They invited them to come and describe how Amazon's growth has destroyed Seattle. And so here's the grandma with the nose ring, telling them that they aren't going to get good jobs out of Amazon moving into New York City.
This model is forcing other businesses to shut down. Messages like this one and Rashad's that we heard earlier.
Oh, by the way, and I got to interrupt her 5 seconds yet. You know it's forcing small businesses to shut down? It's not Amazon. I mean, yes, Amazon has an impact just as Walmart had an impact on mom and pop stores. But Amazon also creates so many support-level jobs, like Boeing. The word on Boeing was that for every Boeing employee, they created 2 other jobs in the food delivery or the restaurant business or you know, just everywhere. Warehousing. What's destroying other jobs is the fact that we have the highest minimum wage in the country. We have the most restrictive employer policies on family leave and flex scheduling. And she has the audacity, when the Seattle City Council has done everything it can do to destroy business, and she has the audacity to say, oh, it's not our fault, it's Amazon's fault. I mean, that's how out of touch. But when you've got socialists in charge, reality is completely disconnected from the conversation.
This model is forcing other businesses to shut down. Messages like this one and Rashad's that we heard earlier is a call for all of you to think about your city's incumbent residents. Because many, many of the living wage jobs will go to people moving into Long Island City. In Seattle, only recently has Amazon come out of the shadows as a civic stakeholder. For 20 years now in Seattle, developers, political consultants, and those within City Hall have done their bidding.
Can you imagine if you're Jeff Bezos and you have the investment you have in Seattle, the number of jobs you create, the amount of tax money you pay, and you have Seattle council members now trying to destroy you in your next location of New York City? Can you imagine how Bezos must feel about these council members who have no clue about the real world? And let's hear more from the grandma with the nose ring.
This developer had a successful track record of getting public subsidies for private endeavors, notably our football stadium, to the tune of $300 million. Over the following 15 years...
Yeah, now she's demonizing Paul Allen in the weeks after his death. That was that's the developer that she's talking about here because of what he's done in South Lake Union, where he tried to put in a huge commons park as a civic, just a civic donation, but the people voted it down. So now she's demonizing Paul Allen to New York City.
This developer convinced City Hall to both upzone the neighborhood for commercial and residential development, and invest $1.2 billion of the city's money in infrastructure improvements to custom recreate the neighborhood for big tech, including a failed streetcar that still the city subsidized, cutting into our ability to equitably fund transit throughout the city.
Failed streetcar that the Seattle City Council approved. I told you it would be an economic failure. The city council refused to listen to me on this, and now they act like they knew what was coming. It's just absolutely amazing to listen to all of this. And then Teresa Mosqueda, she also is in New York City to demonize Amazon.
In Seattle, you see that the majority of the population that was living in Seattle has, who were low-income working families, has been pushed out, pushed to the south, pushed to areas where they are still now having to commute 1 and 2 hours into their jobs. They're still maybe working as baristas, who are janitors, who are the construction workers, but they're living farther and farther out of our city because they can no longer afford it. In fact, we saw that in 2012, right when Amazon consolidated, we in Seattle were about 35% above the national average in terms of housing costs. Now, just last year, we were at 113% over the national cost. The result is gentrification. The result is people not being able to keep the homes that they grew up in. The result is fewer people being able to buy their first homes, to start their own families in the city that they work in.
This is just unbelievable. The reason people can't keep the homes they grew up in is because, in many cases, the annual property tax bill is more than what the house costs to buy. I know families. I know families in Ballard where I grew up, where the kids would have loved to have kept mom and dad's house. Mom and dad paid $10,000 for the house back in the 50s and the 60s, and their annual property taxes now are over $13,000. You have the highest cost of living growth of any city in the country. That study came out last week. That's because we have the highest minimum wage. That's because of the cost of government. That's because the accused child rapist mayor decided to add 1,300 bureaucrat jobs at more than an average of six figures. Average of six figures. You don't think that drives things up when you drive up the cost of government? I got so much more of this I'm going to play for you as we progress through the afternoon. You'll hear it in the Fastest 15. You'll hear it in the Big Lead at 2, because I got a lot more audio from these whack job council members who are poisoning New York City against Amazon. That there is your Big Lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
And I will have much more on that. Our other top story, of course, over the weekend, the Seahawks season coming to an end. I was down there in Dallas. Brock Huard, with his partner Mike Salk, they did the first post-game interview with Pete Carroll this morning. And you'll hear what the coach had to say. Coming up next, the Monday Monster Quarterback with Brock Huard as the Dory Monster Show gets rolling.
The Monday Monson Quarterback.
Blue in it, check. Brown, 24, Razor.
Brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Where the 12s hear the Hawks.
Play fake to Penny Russell, lets it go. Down the far sideline, reaching up, making a catch. Touchdown, Seahawks!
Here's Dory Monson.
Well, it is Monday afternoon, and for the final time following a game this weekend, it's time for the Monday Monster Quarterback with our friend Brock Huard from 710 ESPN Seattle. And kind of a blue Monday here, Brock, I'd say.
Yeah, we have our Blue Friday where we all love to wear blue to work, and all over the community, everybody's wearing their jerseys. And yeah, I think that's a fair way to characterize it. I'm kind of glad, to be honest with you. We had at least 24 hours to digest it. And I know you had a fun trip coming back, and all good travel and chance to be around other community. And yes. I think that helped to a degree. But yeah, just a bummer, Dory, because this was such a fun team. You and I doing this over a number of years, there have been more talented teams. Mm-hmm. But as far as just a fun team of guys that you just want to root for,
yes,
and you never know who's going to be the star, to see that come to an end right now is a bummer.
Yeah, and it's so abrupt, too, because I think a lot of us thought that the Seahawks were going to be able to advance and maybe do some damage. And there is such a finality in these NFL playoffs. And you think about, you know, like what the Chicago Bears went through last night. A kick off the upright, as time expires, there is just a finality to these games where you go from an emotional high to vacuum.
No question. No question. And there's four teams. In fact, three other home teams. That happened in Baltimore. That happened in Chicago, right? It happened down in Houston yet again. And it just comes to a close. There's a reason the Cowboys won 9 of 10 games. Right? And and they outplayed the Seahawks.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they were the more physical team. We talked about it going in, Dory, at the end of last week. Like, you know, these two styles are going to collide. They're both going to want to establish the run. And when you get outgained the way they did on the ground, it was going to be hard for this group to win.
Well, you guys had a really interesting conversation with Pete Carroll this morning, kind of his postmortem of the game and of the season. And the storyline was really clear as we were doing the post-game show down there in Dallas, Brock. And that was the criticism. Twitter was going nuts. They should have thrown the ball more. They should have thrown it more. The running game wasn't working. And so the offensive coordinator, Brian Schottenheimer, has been coming under a lot of fire. And your partner, Mike Salk, asked Pete Carroll about that this morning.
You understand that Brian Schottenheimer is coming under a lot of fire today.
Yeah, I think that's what you guys do. You know, this done the talk show stuff or whatever. That's a bunch of garbage. What a terrific football season we had. This was the second highest scoring team in the history of the franchise, I think. Come on. And we outran everybody, and we did not turn the ball. We almost set an all-time NFL record for fewest turnovers in a season. That's discipline and tactics and approach and all that. I get it. Everybody feels bad about it. Brian's a hell of a coach, and he does a great job, and he did a great job with our guys throughout the season and will continue to. So,
if I would have told,
I'm sorry that they feel that way, but yeah, we needed to execute better.
So let me ask you, Brock, do you agree with the criticism of the offensive game plan?
I loved how much they ran the ball, Dory. I loved it. And he was in a no-win proposition. If he would have thrown it and there's a pick, there's a sack fumble, it is how in the world do you get away from your identity of what you did over the last 10 weeks of becoming this run team, this dominant number one in the league. So, no, I had no problem with the amount of run plays. I had a real challenge with some of the execution. And as Pete told us this morning, unfortunately, Fluke and Sweezy were banged up. The game was moving too fast for them. They couldn't really kind of catch up to what Dallas was doing. So I had no issue with the number of run plays. There's obviously issues in the execution and maybe even what those calls were, knowing some of the limitations of your own personnel.
Well, now they want to start focusing on their future. They have to, now that the season's over. And one of the questions they're going to have to address soon is Russell Wilson, who wants to be the highest paid quarterback in the history of the NFL. And again, your partner asked Pete Carroll about that this morning.
There's a group of people out there who don't believe it makes sense to pay top money for a quarterback in a scheme where you're going to be as balanced as yours is. How do you feel about all of that?
I don't think they understand. Whoever's saying that, they don't get it. Russell's a great player. He's a fantastic player. He just had an incredible season. How many guys could throw that many touchdown passes in that many attempts? Be that efficient, that clean? He's one of a kind. He's an incredible football player. That is at hand. You know, we'll be talking about all that stuff during this offseason.
I agree with you, and I want to speak for the group out there, though, because I think what they would argue is, yes, all of those things are true, but at $30 million or so, could you get someone else to do a lot of that, to hand the ball off, to come with a couple of plays a game and spend the $30 million
elsewhere? Mike, I think that you guys could help the narrative here about to say that to run the football means that you don't have to have a good quarterback or you know that you're just running the ball. We are so enamored with these other numbers that everybody wants to cheerlead about. Let's win football games. Let's play good winning style and show the consistency and show the ability to play a great ball all the way across the board, offense, defense, teams, the whole thing, that it takes to play a great season and get a great championship run going. And that management of that instrumental part of the quarterback position is just as important on our team as it is on any other team.
That's a long soundbite there, Brock, but I think it's an important one because nothing's more important than winning, and nobody has won more than Russell Wilson in the first 7 years. And so that is a criticism I have to admit I just don't understand.
Yeah, you know, Pete talked today about their final team meeting yesterday,
and kind of his charge to the entire group was about mastery. Mastery, take your game to the next level. He talked about that with Russell a couple years ago in this final meeting. So we're going to have master's level courses. We're going to kind of elevate all of this. Russell is a master of winning, whatever it takes. Dory, I don't know what you felt in that press box as you guys were all down there Saturday night. If the defense does their job on 3rd and 14, and that should never happen. That can never happen. 3rd and 14 is converted 5% in this league, and that run call, a QB draw, that can never happen.
I mean, since you brought that up, that's the one play that I pulled to talk to you about. I'll explain why, because I know you're in the middle of it too, but here's the play you're talking about. 3rd and 14, hold them to a field goal, and you can drive down and get a game-winning touchdown. Here's the play.
Elliott is in the backfield with Prescott taking the shotgun snap. He's going to run a quarterback draw. He's got running room up the middle. He's missed by one man. He dives for the end zone. The ball is down on the one, but it is a first down.
Oh, and Brock, I hate to bring up a basketball analogy, but if there was one thing that was guaranteed when I was coaching to get me off the bench, calling a timeout, and lighting up my players, it was if somebody drove through my defense and got to the rim, got to the basket, and I would scream at them, "You knocked them on their butt before you ever let somebody get down there." And that's what I was reminded of as I was watching that, Brock.
Couldn't believe it, Dory. I really firmly believed. I was with Titus and Haley watching the game up in the mountains and thought, okay, grind, get down there, find a way, win it late. This is what they do. And 3rd and 14, even the two previous third down, pass interference, those were bummers, but okay, they're down there. Well, now they're 3rd and 14. Like, you've done your job. Now just finish it. And unfortunately, there was not mastery. There was not mastery by anybody on that defense right there. D-line to have awareness. Bobby and Bradley, your two best players defensively, both duck their heads. They both whiff. They both miss that tackle. And because I really do believe, had they held them to a field goal there, Russell gets the ball with 2 minutes. I don't know if you had the same belief in that building that I did from afar, but I really believe that you give him the ball with 2 minutes, he would have his fifth game-winning drive of the season.
Without
question. They were going to win.
Yes.
They were going to win.
No doubt.
And while everybody will torch Russell and Daryl Bevel and crew for their shortcoming in a Super Bowl with a play call, and it was a risky play call that was not executed by three guys, that was a call on 3rd and 14 that has to be executed. You have to do your stinking job.
My favorite moment in your interview this morning with Pete, they got back late Saturday night. There were two NFL games yesterday, and you asked Pete this.
Could you turn on the TV and watch the ball yesterday?
Huh?
Were you able to watch ball yesterday or no?
Yeah, before my eyes. I did watch the end of the game, and the kick and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Saw a few things. But no, I'm not real up for watching ball right now.
That's just a pained man right there.
Oh, gosh. I didn't mean to have present such a painful deal. And he did turn it, though, so I'll watch the Rams this next weekend.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Get right back on it, because winning this division, you know, for this team, maybe not Baltimore, maybe not Houston, and you know, and maybe not Chicago in their own building, but this team, in home playoff games, if you're the number one or two seed, you get to a Super Bowl. And that connection with these fans and just the environment up here, you don't lose home playoff games up here. And next year when we're talking here at this time of year, that's what hopefully we're doing.
Yeah, they got to win the division. That's the secret. Brock, I've loved our conversations all season, and we'll find other stuff to talk about on the Mondays to come.
I have a feeling we sure will.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Brock, I appreciate it. Thank you, friend.
You got it, Dory. Hey,
Brock Heward, you hear him every morning, 7 to 10 a.m. on 710 ESPN Seattle. He is the Monday Monster Quarterback, sponsored by IRG, Physical and Hand Therapy. And we have lots more straight ahead. Take it away, Brock. It's the Dory Monson Show.
Rolls on.
Sounded like you pulled something there.
I did my hammy right there. Just pulled my hammy.
I was just going through all the messages I've been receiving from you on the Online Trading Academy text line at 98973. As you may have heard just a few minutes ago in Ursula's newscast, in fact, another call that you need to make, Nicole. The White House just announced a primetime Oval Office address tomorrow night from the president to explain why there's a crisis at the border with human trafficking and drugs and illegals coming into the country. And they say they've scheduled it for 6 p.m. Seattle time, 9 o'clock Eastern. Again, that might be a big ratings grabber. Could you call the White House and see if they would move that to noon Seattle time tomorrow, please?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. So we don't have confirmation yet as to whether they can move the Oval Office event, but we're working on it
but
here.
We don't really need his help anyway.
It's not like he's... Yeah, we don't need anybody's help. We're fine. We're just fine. Why are we so fine? Because we can point out the ridiculousness of things like political correctness on our show. Let me tell you about maybe one of the most gross examples of political correctness run amok that I've ever heard. There's a guy who, in over a 23-year period, he sexually assaulted and committed gross indecency on a 12-year-old boy. 2 years later, he raped a pregnant woman after spiking her soft drink with vodka. This guy's name, David Thompson. He had a history of sexually offending that stretched back to 1989. That's when he first indecently exposed himself to a 9-year-old boy. And then, as I said, gross indecency on a 12-year-old boy, raped a pregnant woman, committed multiple rapes of a 23-year-old woman. And that's when David Thompson came up with a brilliant plan. He said, I'm not going to be David Thompson anymore. I'm going to be Karen White. So what did he do to carry out his transgender plan? He started wearing wigs. That's it. Didn't do any gender alterations. Didn't do anything hormonally. He just started wearing wigs and said, I identify as a woman. And so when it was time for David Thompson to go to prison, he said, No. I'm Karen White. You have to send me to the women's prison. And in an absolutely bizarre decision, they said, okay, they said that we want to be sensitive to those who are transgender, but they also might have wanted to consider that this guy had raped multiple women. Because guess what happened when he went to the women's prison? He raped multiple inmates there. And now the court says, well, obviously this guy was wearing a wig to put himself in contact with vulnerable women. But by changing his name and putting on a wig, and because in politically correct times, we want to be sensitive to transgender people, they actually sent a guy who raped women into a women's prison. They now say, while we work to manage all prisoners, including those who are transgender sensitively, we are clear that the safety of all prisoners must be our absolute priority. The guy is back in court, dressed in a blonde bobbed wig, wearing makeup and a floral blouse, speaking in a deep voice to confirm her name, Karen White, who's going to be sent to a men's prison now for these latest rapes. Ah, political correctness. Ain't it grand? That's 15 next.